case 24-134 regarding Kelly Pettinger DVM. This is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Kelly Pettinger in case number 24-134. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 32-2234. Dr. Pettinger, please go ahead and introduce yourself and counsel.
Dr. Kelly Pettinger and counsel Sarah Stark.
Sarah Stark, counsel for Dr. Pettinger.
Thank you. Dr. Pettinger, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now. No, sorry. Thank you. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. We'll begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given the opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. So at this time, Dr. Nosley, could you please give us a brief summary of the case?
Okay, thank you. On April 10, 2024, Dot, a 14-year-old male domestic short hair, was presented to the respondent for a dental procedure. The cat was fractious and was hypersalivating in his kennel. Due to the cat's temperament, sedation was required prior to IV catheterization. The cat was anesthetized and glycopyrrolate was administered to the cat to help reduce the hypersalivating. The dental was performed, two teeth were extracted, and the cat recovered. During the course of the dental, staff and respondent would clear away any saliva and water buildup from the cat's mouth. After extubation, the cat was placed in his carrier to provide comfort while the staff monitored him. The complainant was contacted and advised the cat was ready to be picked up. Shortly after the complainant was called, the cat was found unresponsive and not breathing. CPR was performed without success, and the cat passed away. Complainant could not be reached to let her know what happened. The complainant arrived to pick up the cat, and the respondent reported what had transpired. Respondent confirmed complainant's suspicion that the cat likely aspirated. Complainant expressed concerns that the cat was not properly monitored, nor were measures taken to prevent the cat from aspirating.
Thank you. All right, so Dr. Pettinger, at this time I'd like to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. All right, so Dr. Pettinger, we will now give you an opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very brief with my comments. I just wanted to highlight the fact that the investigative committee did review this case, determined that there were no violations, and did recommend a dismissal. I understand that the last time the board met, there were some outstanding questions that the board members may have had about some of the circumstances, and that's why we're here today, is to try to clear up any questions that you guys may have about what happened here. I want to note that upon review of the record, there is no indication that anything was done incorrectly or inappropriately in this case. I think sometimes when you have an older animal, these things just happen, and it doesn't necessarily mean that there was any, again, wrongdoing or misconduct on the part of the vet or staff. So at this time, I'll turn it over to the board members for any questions you may have, and we can hopefully try to clear up any outstanding questions about what happened. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd now like to ask board members if they have any questions for Dr. Pettinger. Dr. Nosley, you're the lead.
Okay. Hi. The records we have about Dot begin with the 3/20/24 pre-dental exam that you did. Was this the first time Dot had been seen at that hospital?
It was the first time that I had seen it.
How about previous times to the hospital?
Previous times to our hospital, he had not been presented. Okay. Staff members had worked with him at another hospital prior.
That's why our records begin with 3/20. The next two questions from, I think this will cover what you said about the other hospital. Ashley said, was a longtime client, and every time Doc came in for visits, he was mildly fractious. So, do you know how many times she had worked with this guy?
I don't know specifically. It was at another hospital that I was not associated with.
So that's what she's referring to. Every time he came in, that was not the hospital you were at.
No, that was not the hospital that I was at.
Okay. Your narrative and the record states that Dot had severe dental disease. And it's apparent in the record that the procedure was fairly short, about 15 minutes or less, from the anesthesia record. So did that include scaling, polishing, probing, radiographs?
We do not have dental radiography at our practice, so okay. Radiographs were not included.
Okay.
It did include scaling, polishing, and probing. Mm-hmm. On cleaning the teeth, Dot was found to have fairly minimal periodontal disease, actually. It was really just severe tartar.
Okay. Then the record indicates you extracted 108 and 208.
Yes.
Those are the, make sure we're talking about the same teeth, we're on the same page here. Fourth upper premolars on both sides?
Yes.
Okay. Did that require a gingival flap?
No, both teeth were quite mobile and came out quite easily.
So all three roots just came out at once?
Yeah.
So that would be severe enough. Probably not the rest of the mouth.
Yeah, the rest of the mouth was mainly just the tartar. The periodontal disease was centered around those particular teeth.
And no sutures placed?
No sutures placed.
It was mentioned multiple times in all of the narratives we have from the staff, and you mentioned it four times in yours, that Dot had excessive saliva or hypersalivation. Were you concerned about this?
I was concerned about that, and that was the reason that I had administered the glycopyrrolate to him on induction of anesthesia. It's not a medication that we give as a standard. He was extremely distressed and fractious and was hypersalivating throughout attempting to get him sedated initially. Yeah. After administration of the glycopyrrolate, the hypersalivation did decrease significantly.
Okay. So why was Dot placed in the bag in the recovery kennel?
The technician who had worked with him previously had mentioned that he's generally more tractable, less fractious when he's in his cat restraint bag. He had been handled on the pre-dental examination, mainly in the cat bag to help restrain him for his blood draw. And he was much more tractable, much more handleable with that in place. As he was recovering from anesthesia, he was quite fractious. He was growling and chewing on the ET tube prior to extubation. And given the difficulty that we had with him prior to the anesthetic procedure, we felt that it would be a safer recovery for him to be in the bag where he was going to be less fractious and less stressed.
So whose decision was it to put him in the bag?
It essentially, it was a group decision that I discussed with my technicians, but it I was definitely involved.
So you were involved in that decision to put him in the bag? Okay. And how do you know it made him calmer?
Based mainly on the information from the technicians that who had worked with him previously.
Okay.
He was, when I had examined him, when he came in for the pre-dental exam, he was in the bag when he initially came in. We removed him from the bag for a brief period to do his exam. He was somewhat fractious at that time, but handleable, and then placed him back into the bag to take him into the back room for his blood draw.
And Dr. Nosley, if I may, you have a picture of the bag, correct? I just want to make sure that we all know what type of bag we're talking about and not one that the head's sticking in.
Thank you.
Just wanted to make sure for clarification.
Thank you,
yeah.
I think we'll be discussing that, but thank you. To your knowledge, were there previous times the dot was placed in his bag in a kennel?
In a kennel, not to my knowledge. He had only been, like you said, seen at our hospital once.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that any of the technicians had had experience with him having an anesthesia procedure previously.
Okay. Or they didn't mention anything to you about him being put in a bag in a kennel for anything.
No, just that he was generally more tractable and more handleable for whatever diagnostics or treatments we needed to do when he was in his bag.
Okay. Did you participate or observe the putting of Dot in the bag?
I did not directly observe putting him in the bag, but I did observe him shortly after when he was placed in the kennel, and he was sitting sternal in the bag, was very much aware, and was attempting to strike at staff members through the bag.
Okay. So you didn't observe how tightly the strap was placed?
I did not observe how tightly the strap was placed, but he was quite mobile within the bag. I didn't observe anything that made me concerned that the bag was placed too tightly.
So after this event, did you have discussions with the staff concerning Dot being placed in the bag, ask them any more questions?
I did have a discussion with Ashley, who was the technician who found him and removed him from the bag. She said that she did not observe any issues, that the bag seemed to be too tight around his neck or restricting of his movement in any way when she found him. He was essentially unresponsive, but she was able to get three fingers into the collar of the bag to pull the Velcro.
This is when he stopped.
When he had stopped breathing.
So in those discussions, given the fact that at one point in the pre-meds administration, Dot had actually got away from him.
Yes.
So what I'm asking is, did the staff indicate to you at any point in time that he was placed in the bag as a means of preparing him for release?
From
the hospital?
From the hospital. Yes, he was placed in the bag partially to attempt to calm him down mm-hmm. and reduce his fractious behavior, but also so that when he was going to be discharged, he would be much more easy to handle.
Okay. Were there any towels in the kennel?
There was a towel in the kennel underneath the cat bag.
Okay. So the observation of Dot during the recovery is approximately 40 minutes. Was his head visible the whole time?
Yes. He was placed in the cat bag with his head facing and quite close to the front of the kennel.
Okay. And we have information from probably Ashley that he was moving around in the bag. How can you, if his head's out, how is he moving around?
He was essentially just shifting his position, I think more kind of attempting escape. But he was sternal, and especially when staff members were close by, he was attempting to strike and bite through the kennel.
Strike in the bag?
Within the bag. He was he could hear that he was attempting to strike.
I think it was Lauren that stated she took vitals at 12:20. How did she take vitals?
Kristen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, she was able to go in, and there are areas of the cat bag that can be opened separately.
Mm-hmm.
So she was able to open one of those Velcro areas to get a stethoscope in to listen to him.
Okay.
She stated that he was extremely fractious and attempting to strike and bite at her through that, but she was able to get to auscultate his heart. She wasn't able to obtain a pulse. But she was able to obtain a temperature.
So that's how she performed that. Okay. And then Ashley said he was observed to have respiration of 28 per minute through the bag?
Yes. He was laying in such a way, and the cat bag was relatively snug. He was a somewhat chunky cat. And we could see the movement of his chest fairly consistently through the bag.
Okay. And when he was found collapsed, all we have is Dot was removed from the kennel. How was he actually found? What position was his body in? Where was his head, body, bag, so forth?
I did not actually observe him in the kennel. I didn't see him until he was brought up into the treatment table. As far as I know, he was observed to be sternal but face down, sort of face planted into the kennel.
So that's what they told you, that he was sternal, face down?
Yes, he was sternal but face down into the kennel.
Okay, did they say anything about, because they started obviously getting him out of the bag?
Yes.
Material in his mouth?
No.
During the CPR, the information we have states that after several attempts, an IV catheter was placed. And so I was wondering what his cardiac assessment at this point. It sounded like they made several attempts and were unsuccessful, and then all of a sudden they were successful.
Yes, we had attempted to place a new IV catheter. His IV catheter had been removed post-procedure. Initially, we were unable to get an IV catheter in either cephalic vein, mainly because there was significant bruising from the initial IV catheter site on the one leg, and the opposite leg was just very difficult to place the catheter. I believe we finally were able to place the catheter in the left saphenous.
Yeah, I think another technician came in and gave it a go. So I was wondering about the cardiac assessment, because in order to place a catheter, you have to have some blood pressure.
Yeah, we were actively performing CPR compressions on him throughout. It was extremely difficult to place the catheter, but we did eventually manage to obtain IV access.
Through the man, you were able to achieve cephalic, was it, where was the catheter placed?
Saphenous.
Saphenous. You were able to get enough blood pressure into the saphenous?
I think it was just a lucky blind stick, honestly. there was no appreciable blood pressure.
Okay. Was it ECG at that point?
He was on ECG monitoring intermittently with compressions, and he was also on pulse ox monitoring at that time.
Okay. All the questions I have.
Okay. Any other questions from board members?
Yes, Madam Chair. I just wanted to check with the DVMs on the board. I know he was about a 15 and a half pound cat, but how about the sedation dosage and the follow-up sedation? Did you find, I think any of it might have been excessive?
In discussion?
Yeah, we'll do that during
talk
discussion,
about
but if
discussion.
You have any questions,
thank you.
Sir. All right. Okay, so we'll go ahead and have you step back. And then, I'm since we do have the complainant in this case, if you want to go ahead and step forth. Yvonne Maggio. Hello. Could you go ahead and introduce yourself to the board?
Yvonne Maggio.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and swear you in. Do you swear or affirm the evidence you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you so much. And you are the complainant in this case?
Yes.
Okay. So we do have the materials that you provided. You can go ahead and address the board if there's anything you'd like to add.
Are you referring to the email that I sent?
Everything that you've sent from the beginning of the case, so your initial complaint. So if you have anything else you'd like to add, otherwise,
I
if you
have provided all the information I could.
Okay, all right. So you just want us to ask questions?
I was just concerned that I was concerned that better care could have been provided had he not been in that carry bag, that travel bag is what it was. I don't see how there are Velcro straps on the sides where you can take a paw out. It's generally used for clipping claws. You know, that's what the two are on the side. But I can't imagine. It's hard for me to imagine getting an IV catheter in through that sleeve. That's hard for me to envision. But you know, I think properly, I think he should not have been in the bag. It would have been easier to provide the emergency care that he needed if he had just been in the kennel.
Okay, thank you. Do any board members have questions?
Just a few. Very sorry for what happened. It wasn't clear in the investigative committee. Do you recall any conversation you had with anyone regarding a necropsy or not?
No, it was not discussed. Necropsy was not.
Either by the doctor or his.
No, it was not suggested.
It wasn't discussed. Clear. Did you ever express to anyone that Doc was calmer in his bag? Did you ever tell them that?
No.
Okay.
No, I used the bag on my cats to take them to the groomer. And he might meow. You know, I put him on the floor, you know, in the car. He might meow at me and meow, but he'll look around. But he doesn't get out of control or anything, you know. And they go for grooming every 6 weeks, you know, to the groomer. And then I use it for the vet, but I had no idea that it was used as part of his post-operative care.
So you never told anyone to put that in the bag, he's more calm?
No. I mean, no. I thought it was understood that that's how I bring him in and that's how I take him home. And I just assumed that clinical procedure is to use clinic available, you know, things.
I think
we
understand.
Yeah.
So we've heard that you had taken Dot, this was the first time, not the dental, but the pre-dental.
Pre-dental?
Yeah. But that Dot had gone to some other facilities where these technicians were a part of that. Had you ever brought Dot to any of those clinics in his bag?
The bag was... honestly, Dot had been previously just for vaccinations to a vet. The travel bag that I got for the cast was pretty recent.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and what I had used, I had been the hard cover.
Right.
The hard kind of, carrier.
So, this particular travel bag, Would it be correct to say this is the first time that you had used that to take him in on 320? Before that, it had been another type of act.
Right, and when I took him for the pre-dental, he was purring and he was fine. Matter of fact, one of the workers had him on the shoulder and everybody was admiring how cute he was. Everything seemed okay. You know, I was just surprised that he could be so combative because that's just not been his history.
Why did you leave the bag at the hospital? Why did you leave the bag?
Well, I left the bag so that when he was ready to come home, they would put him back in the bag so I could take him, carry him to the car, mm-hmm. and he'd be safe in the car. Yeah, that's.
So that was the only time you expected him
right,
to put it in the bag.
Right, because it's a travel bag. It's not meant for any other purpose.
That's all I have.
Any other questions from board?
Yes, thank you. Did you see the cat at any time in between dropping it off and picking and returning or hearing about the outcome?
When I took him in for the procedure, I took him in and then I just took him to the back, you know, and he was fine. He's really never been a problem cat, you know. We took him back and did the check heart and whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. And then that's it. And I left. And
thank you. I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Any other questions from board members? Okay. Thank you so much for your time. You can go ahead and step back. All right. So we can go ahead and have Dr. Fettinger and counsel come back forward. Do you have any additional remarks?
In regards to the information about Dot being more calm in his cat bag, all I can say is that was the information that was given to me from the technicians. I don't have any further input on exactly what their experience had been with the cat previously. It was just that was what I was told, and I was trusting that my technicians were giving me accurate information.
Thank you. Any other questions from board members? Thank you. So this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. So you can go ahead and step back. Thank you. All right, Dr. Nosler.
Okay. So in this case, this was a fairly short duration that Dot was in the hospital, a short procedure. Short time the patient was attended to. When we look at the pre-meds given, acepromazine and butorphanol were given about 2 hours before he was found not breathing at appropriate doses. Midazolam was then administered 1 hour before found not breathing at appropriate dose. But I think the point is they would still be well within their duration of action during recovery. Veterinarians use the term the drugs were on board. Okay, so these drugs were on board, obviously, during recovery. This hypersalivation, it seems to be a little bit different what I read versus what I heard. That his hypersalivation was noted originally and then addressed. But in the information we have, it seemed to be continuing through the whole time. Multiple times, wiping out the mouth, when they found the cat, they wiped out, collapsed, they wiped out his mouth. I mean, that's reasonable, but it seems like this hypersalivation was continuing on, and so I wondered why that wasn't addressed with more anticholinergic. Their respondent felt that aspiration was the likely cause of death, and that was discussed with the complainant, but we don't know the cause of death. There are certainly some other possibilities here. Both pre-existing conditions and other issues. We can't just assume this was an aspiration death. The key point for me in this case concerns the decision to put the patient in the bag for recovery. These bags, like we heard, have a Velcro strap around the neck that has to be tight enough, but not too tight, obviously. I have personal experience with the veterinary form, we'll call it the medical form of this bag, very, very early in my career, before we commonly used a lot of chemical restraint or didn't have it available. A cat restraint bag was used in my practice for a very, pretty short amount of time. I was surprised to find out they're still available from the suppliers. A veterinary cat restraint bag. For these fractious cats that you need to put them in the bag to give them injections or whatever. In my experience with that bag, the neck tightness is critical. Obviously, too much is bad, but too little is bad, too. I've seen cats get their paw up in there, get their front paw out. I've seen cats that you think you have the bag tight enough around their neck, and they come out of it like toothpaste out of a tube, because that's what cats do. I've also had cats that became so stressed in the bag that, risking life and limb, we had to get them out. Start hyperventilating and struggling in the bag. It's not a good thing. But at one time, and maybe still for some, it has a purpose. This particular bag is marketed and sold as a transportation device. It's a little different. It's bigger. It's so that you can carry them, that type of thing. But the basic concept is the same. You put them in the bag and their heads out, their head and necks out. So, question for me, does it fall below the standard of care to place a cat in a bag in a kennel anytime? Anytime is that appropriate, to put a cat in this type of bag? We all put them in their soft carriers and their transport carriers, you know. If they're completely in there, that's done a lot, it makes sense. But putting a cat in what amounts to a restraint bag in a kennel, does that fall within standard of care?
I don't know, because it's not technically a restraint bag, right?
Right.
It's actually branded as a transportation bag.
Right.
And those other pieces that you just talked about are transportation bags, and those are often done. So that's, you know, when you do have a fractious cat, I mean, plenty of times you put them in there, obviously you're still monitoring them,
mm-hmm.
but you know that the cat's either going to hurt itself or maim you and your staff once they're fully awake, right?
Right.
And so you put them in there. I guess for me, like, I didn't know that those existed as a transportation bag. I had only seen them more as a confinement bag.
Right.
And I wouldn't feel comfortable transporting my cat in a bag like that if his head's up. And just like you said, how do we know the rest of the body's not going to come out, right? But I mean, I can see it both ways. Like, I don't know if I would have been comfortable, but at the same time, like, if those were, like, if that was the containment item that it came in, and that was what we would have used to confine the cat should she have brought in a soft carrier or a hard carrier, like, that was the tool that we were given.
I think if the cat was put in it once it was recovered and you felt like it was ready to go home and you put it in the carrier in prep for going home,
Yes. But it sounded like to me this cat was put in it during recovery.
Right.
And I don't know how you effectively monitor a cat in that bed.
That's my issue.
Right? Like, there might be times that that's the only option because of the fractious nature of a pet, but I don't know that I've ever come across where I couldn't figure out how to monitor a cat enough that I felt comfortable it was ready to go and I could put it in a carrier. And it was interesting to me that that is not the behavior that this cat typically presents with either. I thought that that was very interesting because I thought this was just a fractious cat that no matter, like, my cat is a fractious cat. No matter what, you're going to get a fractious cat. You take him out of my house, right? So, like, that's what I was perceiving, not a cat that curls up on somebody's neck the visit before. It just seems very out of character. I'm not sure what happened on this visit that made that. But maybe it was a dental, maybe it was anesthesia, maybe it was a lot of different things. It just seems weird to me that it was that bad, you had to have it in a bag.
Yeah, I've had cats like that. The owners say he's fine at home, everything's great.
No.
And sometimes you take him and you put him back in the kennel.
No, I
and
get
then
that.
You come to get him.
Like, that's how my cat is.
And
totally
they come
fine.
Flying out
super
of
nice. You right. take him to the clinic, totally different. This
yeah.
is, he was okay. at the clinic and very comfortable and sitting on a technician's neck
yeah.
at one visit, and then the next visit to the same clinic, he's so fractious that you can't even put him in a normal kennel to monitor him, you have to put him in a bag.
Yeah.
You went from one extreme to, like, the other extreme, which isn't typical of cat behavior, in my opinion. It's like, I don't know, something seemed
that's
interesting about that, but enough to put him in a bag. Like, I'm trying to figure out, because if I really felt like this cat was a danger to the veterinary team and was going to do some harm, I guess I can see them putting him in the bag, right? We have to protect our staff and things like that, and you're going to take risks that you don't love to take if you have to do that. I guess I'm just struggling with, was that actually absolutely necessary in a cat that has otherwise been handleable?
Yeah. And then we also had the issue that the pre-meds were still affecting this cat.
Yeah.
And we're all aware of what cats can do in recovery. Sometimes they flail, sometimes they do some acrobatics in that kennel. It can happen, and this cat was placed in the bag. It concerned me. In my opinion, the patient was adequately monitored. If he hadn't been in a bag.
How do you know the bag wasn't more stressful? I mean, I know the veterinarian's going off of what her staff told her, which is questionable and unfortunate, but I just wonder, like, if you're a cat and you are feeling anxious from pre-meds or something like that and anesthesia and you don't know where you are and you're coming out of anesthesia and you're freaking out and you feel constrained,
right.
is that going to cause more stress?
Well, but yet we advocate wrapping them tightly in towels, right? So, like, I mean, I hear you, but we also
after anesthesia, though?
We use that as a calming element. Or, again, if you have a cat that starts flailing, you try to, you know, you don't want it just free and bouncing all over the kennel because it can hurt itself. So I hear you, because we're all going to react differently to, and we do react
well,
differently.
Well, and I don't
anesthesia.
Know that that's below the standard of care. Anyway.
Right.
I'm just more,
yeah.
So let me ask you, with your experience in cats, why isn't this bag available at all clinics to put bags in, put cats in the bag for recovery because they'll be calmer? It'd be a good idea.
It's not part of fear free.
Yeah.
It's not.
And there are.
I didn't know that these transportation bags existed. So, like.
Yeah. Well, if they were this. Serve the purpose that we're talking about them serving, I think they'd be a tool we don't have. And there are other ways you can handle a fractious cat. You know, go get a soft-sided kennel and put it in a bag and put it in there. Push it up, let him run in there. We have a lot of things you can do. This wasn't a case of this is the only way to get this cat out of this hospital. I don't think so. So it concerns me greatly that this cat was put in this bag, especially under these circumstances, but at any time I would be very concerned about that. So I believe it does rise to the level of violation, and we'll see where that goes. So I would make a motion in this case to find 3222, 3212 as it relates to R311, 501, 1, failure to follow professionally acceptable procedures by placing a cat in the described transport bag in a kennel.
And would you have said the same thing if the cat truly had been fractious enough he couldn't handle it? Like, would you have said...
But is this a reference to immediately post-op for monitoring?
Yes,
that's
during
what
recovery.
I've been here.
Yeah.
Is it specific to immediately post-op?
I didn't say that, but I certainly would say it for recovery. Immediately for recovery, if you want to...
Well, I'm just
that.
I'm just trying to figure out, like...
So you're thinking it's okay another time. It might be okay another time to do that.
I'm just saying, if the cat had been fully recovered and it was truly fractious, I guess I would say I wouldn't find it a violation to put it back in its transport bag.
No, I wouldn't either.
But if it was, while he's in recovery and you're still trying to monitor him, there are better ways to potentially... monitor that cat than putting him in the bag. And is that a letter of concern or is that a violation, I guess, is what
we're
talking
about.
That's
where we're at. So, without standing there in front of the kennel, I don't think it's appropriate to put a cat in a bag in the kennel. But if we wanted to confine it to the violation with putting a cat immediately following anesthesia in the bag,
well, I just feel like that's the most critical time that you should have been monitoring, especially a cat that's had excess saliva that's had, you've had some other issues with this cat. But.
So, the wording I could amend to, by placing a cat in the described transport bag for recovery immediately following surgery, we can add that.
Which inhibited proper monitoring.
Sure. So that's the motion.
Second.
Kate, you want to weigh in?
No, I can definitely see where it immediately post-op. I guess one of the pieces that I was also hearing from the respondent, though, was like he was, or maybe I'm mistaken, but that he had been kind of awake enough to still be striking. So like
in the bag,
right after recovery. So like where does that delineation happen, right? Because we know like they can come out of it and they can be surly as all get out, and then all of a sudden. You know, and everybody's in danger, and then
basically fall back.
Right, exactly. And so it's like it is hard. Like I would be less likely to put it in a confinement like that immediately post-op. I want to be able to look at it, but I have put them in soft carriers or their hard carriers because that's what they came in, and I knew like as soon as it was awake, just a smidge more, we were all going down. Right. So like, so it is that balance, and I guess to my point is like. They, not knowing what other supplies they had at the clinic that I worked at, I didn't have random cat carriers hanging around. If I did, they were the cardboard ones, which I would never want to put them in because I'd have to close it and not see it, right? So then what do you do as far as confinement if you don't have a soft carrier or a hard carrier because that's not what the animal came in? Mm-hmm. So it's a hard spot to be in. I don't know what I would do in that specific situation.
This cat came in that bag. Though.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Correct.
So I would assume that cat was used to being in that space.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume that would be a preferred space to put the cat back into.
Mm-hmm. I could
for transport home, I agree.
Yeah.
Totally.
The underlying issue of the hypersalivation and constantly having to wipe the mouth out in that description kind of makes you worried, right? For it's not the situation I don't think of just the bag, right? It's not the situation of it was just post-op. It's like this whole combination of things that's unique to this case.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you're going to get a one-size-fits-all answer on another case, but in this situation, it was just a whole lot of details that stacked up that ended really, really poorly for a really bad outcome for Dot, you know?
Yeah.
So this is a tough one. I don't think
it
they're easy anyways, but this situation is really tough because obviously the veterinarian didn't want this outcome either, you know? So.
What if?
So we have a motion and a second.
What if, one more thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What if the complainant didn't leave the bag?
Sure.
She left it for convenience, for her.
Right.
This cat would have been monitored differently through his recovery phase.
Perhaps. I mean, we don't have a time machine, right? Like, yeah. if it was truly the hypersalivation, his head was technically sticking out of the bag. So that part would have been monitored. Like, for me, I think of the monitoring and the inability to monitor the actual respiration, because can I see that bag moving? You know, and that's what I'm thinking of. I could still see what's on the outside, right? So, but yeah, that's a whole other piece of it, is the hypersalivation. Where does that fall?
Sometimes you have trouble assessing respiration in a cat out of a bag.
Mm-hmm.
So how you're supposed to do it in a bag.
Right.
And that's why I ask questions about how they found the cat.
Mm-hmm.
A paw sticking out. We know what happened. He strangled.
Right.
Okay. And the potential is there.
Right.
That's my concern. No, I don't think there's any malicious intent on anyone's part here. I think they were all trying to do what was best for the cat and themselves. And I think it was not following acceptable medical procedures to put the cat in the bag for recovery. So that's the motion. And
I second.
Okay. Yes. Now I think we're totally.
Now I have a motion and a second. Should we roll call this one?
You did.
Dr. Byrne?
Nay.
Hold on 1 second, sorry.
His name is Statute 70?
Yeah. 32.
Oh, yes, he did.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, sorry.
Dr. Burns, a nay. Ms. Ross?
Aye.
I'm going to go nay. Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Nay.
And Dr. Wright is not here.
Oh, okay.
The reason why I went that way is just because I feel like there's so many in, like, how was this cat? What was the behavior like? Did they wait long enough to feel like it was comfortable and put it in the bag? Are we seeing this in hindsight a little bit differently than what it was in the moment? Like, I think some of those things are just making me a little bit uncomfortable, and maybe I would be more comfortable with a letter of concern on using any kind of transport-related device for post-op monitoring.
So,
the
results of the vote tied.
Yeah, tied, so it failed.
Yeah.
Sorry. So... I guess I'll make a motion that in the case of 24-134 that we find no violations but issue a letter of concern with regards to the use of a transport bag in post-recovery that makes it difficult, if at all possible, to fully monitor that cat.
Second.
So I have a motion and a second. We'll go ahead and roll call this one.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Nay.
Dr. James is an aye. Dr. Nosley?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And it fails again.
Okay.
My concern is that the cat died in this process. And so the outcome may have contributed.
We don't know, though, that the death was related to the bag.
No, but we do know that the bag inhibits monitoring basic life functions.
But so does putting it in a recovery tunnel and walking to your desk.
Mm-hmm.
And so does...
But the bag has some inherent risks associated with the bag itself.
It does. But how many places do you know that hang towels over the front of the kennel in recovery?
Have the risks that a bag around
it has risks. It doesn't have the same risks.
No,
but it has risks. You can't see the cat.
Well, and sometimes they hide under their towel.
Right. So there's
them.
What I'm saying is, in recovery, there's all sorts of things that could pose risk. The bag poses more risk than what I ultimately feel comfortable with, but what I'm saying is I can't judge the situation that they were in enough to really be able to say that I feel like that wasn't necessary for the safer part of the staff. Like, I guess that's where I was struggling. I do think the bag poses risk, and I don't like it, which is why I would even say a letter of concern. Anyone else have any other great ideas? Because we're out of standstill.
Yeah.
So your options are to continue to discuss and see if there is a motion that would be acceptable to the the majority of the members, or you would just continue this matter. Perhaps Dr. Wright would be available next month. He would be able to listen to the audio of the informal, including your discussions, and we can just continue this until that time.
Okay.
Unless anybody has another suggestion for a motion or more discussion.
Or any other thoughts about it. I mean, I feel bad delaying this another month for the people involved in this. I feel like we should be able to come to a solution here. I just feel like there's so many unknowns. And because we do typically, or at least clinics do, put cats in the transport carrier that they came in upon recovery, and that's exactly what this one did, it makes me go, are we being...
It's common to put them in a bag like this?
No, because I don't think those bags are common. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never even seen these bags.
The responsible veterinarian, I don't think necessarily felt good about it, but was advised by other team members, you know, to do it, which I think is probably regrettable at this point. So again,
if you thought that the cat would be less stressed in the bag,
but that wasn't,
and
what
you
she
could
said.
Still see
she
the
was
head.
Saying that she was advised that that was the situation, not that that was.
But
the
I think
true
it
situation.
Was because the staff thought it was less stressed, right?
The
did I hear that right?
And we heard. Sorry, we heard that, this was based
bag.
On experience of this bag and this cat, which we found didn't even happen.
Right. Yeah. So that's the other thing that's weird to me. So anyways, again,
found didn't happen in the owner's presence, right? It doesn't mean that
she said she didn't take the bag in.
Yeah, that
there was
bag.
This
also
was the first time she used the bag going to the vet.
And also mentioning of the cat on the technician's shoulder.
Again, I'm all for team safety, absolutely, and I think if the team's safe, we can make sure that the patient's, you know, safe, and there's opportunities there, but this, just, we have to look in the face of the outcome, too, you know, and this patient passed away, and we won't necessarily know why. There wasn't, you know, a necropsy, and sometimes necropsies reveal information, and sometimes they don't. So even in that situation,
I do think that is one good point. That I feel like they should have offered a necropsy.
Was a necropsy offered?
No. It doesn't sound like.
Well, this, in the investigative committee, it wasn't clear. They said that no, the respondent did not. However, she felt that the staff did, now we find out, at least from the complainant, that nobody said anything. But that happens when they're so upset.
So, any new motion?
To continue the item? Do we need a motion to continue the item?
If
I move to continue this item. Till next month for further discussion.
Do you have something else before we? So you have a motion to continue?
Second.
A motion and a second to continue. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion passes.
So is this, just for my understanding, is this something that we can ask Dr. Wright to review and weigh in on before the next meeting, or is this something we have to rehear the whole thing and go through the whole testimony? Would we just put it on the agenda to talk about, or do we have to bring people back?
It's an informal continuation.
Well, it's a continuation. However, if Dr. Wright has any questions, you know, he would be given an opportunity to ask them. But if he doesn't, then we would just pick up the deliberation phase and what to do. But that's assuming that he's available and he's got the time to, you know, listen to this recording and be prepared for it.
Or it's one of us in our thought process between here and there changes.
Correct.
So we have that.
And that always can
possibility.
Happen.
Possibility.
Yeah,
right.
That can always happen as well, regardless of Dr. Wright's participation.
So this is a continuance of an informal.
Okay, thank you. All right, that concludes this portion of the matter until the continuance next month. Thank you.
Can you take a quick break?
Yes. Do you all need a break?